Welcome back to the Act Two Podcast, a podcast for the real life working screenwriter. I am Tasha Hugh.
And I am Josh Hallman.
And as a reminder, Act Two is a network and support group for the everyday working screenwriter, of which this podcast is just one of the things. Another thing, Josh, is our Patreon.
What?
Yeah. We have our first ever Act Two Patreon script club coming up on April 2nd. And it's very cool. I'm very excited. We all read the same script. Then we hop on a Zoom. We talk about why it works, why it doesn't, what we would do differently as writers, what lessons there are to learn from this script as writers.
Yeah.
You learn new techniques.
I'm excited.
I just read a script last night. I learned something totally new about how they do dialogue.
It is crazy how most of the time you read a script and you learn something new.
I think always, even if it's a bad script, you're like, oh, well, that's something I've done, or that's something I know to avoid in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah.
This script club that we're doing, we're reading for the very first time, Burn Night by Chris Sparling, who wrote, among other things, Buried, ATM, these really contained action dramatic movies that were really good. Buried, for me, is like a chef's kiss kind of movie. I love it.
Wow. I don't even think I've read it or seen it. Wait, is that the Ryan Reynolds movie?
The Ryan Reynolds movie.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've seen...
Where he's trapped in a coffin for the entire movie.
Oh, so does it... And it works?
More than works, Joshua! It is a roller coaster. It's fantastic. It's shocking that it works, but it works. It's so good.
Does it do...
Beautiful.
Okay, well, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Okay, keep going.
So this movie, Burn Night, if you've seen Buried, this may surprise you. This movie... is much bigger. It's basically The Purge, but if there were dragons. So the premise is that every year, dragons emerge and they pick places around the whole world at random, and they completely burn it down and destroy it, and they kill thousands.
No way.
And then they disappear. And it's unpredictable when they will come. All they know is that they will come once a year. Hence, Burn Night.
One of my favorite things about, like, one of my, I don't know if it's a genre, I don't know what it is, but the one night thing is, like, when, like, this outside force comes in to destroy everything is, like, my favorite thing.
Favorite.
I freaking love it.
It's pretty cool.
I just thought of mine.
I can see the wheels turning. You thought of it in that half second?
I just thought
this
of it. Remind,
so apropos
remind me to
our
tell
topic.
You. Remind me to tell you right after this podcast.
Anyway, so if that interests you, you want to talk about that script with other writers. If breaking down scripts to its barest mechanics, learning, growing from it, interests you at all, join our Patreon co-EP tier, and you'll be sent the script, you'll be sent the Zoom link, and we will see you on April 2nd.
Boom. I'm excited for it. The other day, someone, his name is Adric, excuse me if I'm mispronouncing it. He had a Zoom get together, kind of like a coffee talk. It was a get together, and I hopped on it. I saw it in the chat. I was like 35 minutes late, but I was like, oh, that's right. And I hopped on, I said hello, and I just want to say I really like what's happening with the Patreon.
I love it. This community that's forming is awesome.
Yeah. Little did they know I was ready to complain about writing.
That's what it's for.
All right.
Joshua, do you have any this week's in writings?
I have a this week in writing, Tasha.
Let's go.
This week in writing.
Have you watched Roadhouse?
Not yet.
Okay.
This has got to happen this week. It's yeah.
Are you around people who are talking about Roadhouse?
Weirdly, no. I'm the one talking about Roadhouse. We were like, oh, that's like an old movie, right? That they like redid.
And
I'm like, you've not seen Roadhouse?
So the other week, I went to our friend Dave's. He had a little birthday party.
Friend of the podcast.
And yep. And daughter, friend of the podcast as well, went to her birthday. Okay. And there was a group of dudes and women. But we were sitting there, and I saw Tim. I'm like, Tim, what's up, man? How's it going? Blah, blah, blah. And we start talking, and I asked what he did. He's like, oh, I watched Roadhouse last night. Like, I watched half of it. I was like, what do you think? He's like, yeah, I was super into it. I was like, oh, that's cool.
You watched
and like
half of it?
Listen.
Sorry, that's for another time.
Yeah. And then someone else at the party was like, yeah, I just watched Roadhouse. And it was like the first time in a very long time.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about this one specific movie. And I was like, oh my God, I have to watch Roadhouse. And then a couple other friends in like a text thread that I'm on were like, I just watched this crazy movie. So anyway, this is all to say I watched it. I don't want to say too much. So we need to talk about it when you see it. And
yeah, I'm excited to see it.
It's insane.
The Patrick Swayze movie is great. We're actually going to do, because I found out that Paul and my BFF Katie have not seen the original Roadhouse. So I think we're going to do a double feature. We're going to watch the OG and then immediately go into Jake Gyllenhaal's movie.
Ooh,
and
then
see
idea.
What we see. And I think that's really, really fun. But I think just side note, this is a funny example of how you and I are very different, because in your circle, people are watching Roadhouse, and mine, people can't shut up about Dune 2. So that just says a lot about our different lives and the people we know.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, listen, there's nothing wrong with either.
It's great. All right.
Do you have one?
One of my This Weeks in Writing
yeah.
is that I'm wearing this because I was just at the gym and I just feel like I need to mention this.
If
that I'm wearing.
Listen, person listening, Tasha rolled onto the podcast with a Karate Kid headband as if she just left a
it's
dojo.
I did. And
confronted the Cobra Kai. And wondered if she's on the right or wrong side.
It was a soul searching morning. One of my This Weeks in Writing is I was talking to a friend of mine, Ellen, who listens to the podcast, and she was talking about how she herself is a writer. She's a really good writer, writes in genre, really good stuff. She was talking about how she listened to an old episode about how we revise our scripts and where do we start. And one of the things that I said that I did was that I start from scratch sometimes, particularly for my own stuff. But usually in those very early phases, like the first round of notes, I will open a brand new document, put my old script next to it, and then just start writing from scratch. And she has found this to be extremely helpful for herself. And she started doing it. She's now two scripts deep on doing this process. And she finds this really, really helpful. And I just wanted to bring that up again because it's something that I just started doing. I'm revising a pitch script of mine. And I started at the top again on a blank page. And what is very helpful about this process, and I would recommend this process for, again, early stages, like the first batch or even the second batch of notes. But once you start getting those more specific notes, like it gets harder to do this and more of a waste of time. But starting from scratch and then just rewriting it is so helpful because you are tightening these scenes as you go, and you're able to, as you're not just going into a scene and changing a note, which can kind of feel like, I don't know, the sort of the metaphor in my head is some big machine and you just go in, it's broken, and you just go in and change one gear, and you're not sort of seeing the overall problem in the whole thing. So by starting at the top, you can work in these bigger notes that people usually have in your first and second batch of notes in a really organic, deeper way than if you just went into the individual scenes. And it just sort of, the script becomes more muscular with all of these great things that you're changing as you go. And then, like I said, it's really helpful to then start trimming things, making things better as you're revising from scratch. So if that's helpful for you, I highly recommend it. Someone told me last night that Tolkien used to do this. I mean,
really?
He write, you know, huge ass novels, and he would start from scratch when he started revising.
Really?
So, you know, if it works, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I don't know. Whatever. Metaphor.
No, I love it. I actually have done it before based off of you telling me you've done it and it worked. And it's one of those things where I wish I don't know. So, you know, when something is good for you, but then you stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of one of those.
Meditation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anyways, moving on. Our topic for today is we thought we would talk about where our ideas have come from, and not just generally where ideas come from, but specifically walk through three movie or TV ideas that we have had in our lives and discuss where those ideas came from. And this, I texted Josh like in the middle of the night this weekend to say like, hey, we should do this episode because I was having dinner with my mom and she started asking me where my new spec idea came from. And then where that launched her into being like, oh, well, where did your idea for this other thing that I know you're writing came from? And then we started to, the more we talked about it, the more I realized like they come from so many different places. So a lot of writers will ask other writers, where do your ideas come from? And that is such a difficult question to answer because it is different every time. So we thought we would illustrate that by going into three of our own things.
I love it. Very well said. And I was telling you right beforehand, and I'm going to tell you again right now, my three are an arc throughout my creative and writing life, which I personally feel is like some I've talked to people about, like it's kind of it's things people kind of go through, and like I'll like get into the mental state and how things kind of got there. And these are not scripts that I'm currently working on. I don't think you're going to talk about what you're currently working on either, but these are things in the past.
I love this. I can't wait for this, Josh.
It's like a three-act structure.
Biography.
Oh, jeez. All right. Who wants to start?
Well, now that you have an arc.
Okay.
I just...
Yeah. Good luck following up with me. Okay. You know the script very well. I've talked about it on the podcast. It's a script called... Can I swear on this podcast, Tasha? Have I ever sworn before? It's called...
You've met me, right?
I Fuck James Bond.
Yes.
Okay.
The OG. Josh Holman.
Well, it's funny you say that because here's the thing. That script, and I'm bringing this script up because I was writing, it's grinding away. I was writing rom-coms. I was writing some sci-fi stuff. I wasn't really finding my groove into writing. And I was submitting scripts. I didn't have a manager. I was trying to get a manager. I was like sending it. I don't know if the Blacklist site was there quite yet, but if it was, I was putting things on the Blacklist. And I wasn't getting much traction, and it was just bugging me. And I would get meetings, but this was actually goes into something we've talked about always like kind of having that second idea and writing within a genre when you're like getting going, because I would meet people. I'd be like, well, I like rom-coms. And I remember I've met with people. They're like, rom-coms are terrible. Like that's going away right now. What else do you write? So I'm like, okay. So I sort of shifted to my other love. I love sci-fi. Like I just love movies, but I wasn't like zoning in on one. So I was disheartened. I wasn't feeling great about things. And I've always, you know, I was like, I want to write like action thrillers, but I didn't really know what that was. And I love James Bond. I was like, I want to write a James Bond film. And in my angry moment of no one liking my stuff, I just said, F it. I am going to write exactly the movie that I want to write in the tone that I want to write it, like how I would write it. And I'm just going to go in, because up until this point, I kind of was maybe holding back a little bit and just kind of doing what I thought people wanted. And so I write I Fuck James Bond, which is the concept of like, I was like, I want to write like a Bond film. But I was like, well, what's different about that? And I thought, okay, well, what if it's through a female perspective? And I was like, well, how would there be like a female James Bond? I was like, oh, what if it's through the Bond girl's perspective? And so that was kind of how that idea came to be. I can't specifically, I don't know where I was. I don't know how it happened, but I remember when it happened, I was like, oh, this is it. And then when I wrote that script, it was just, I just went full in and just kind of wrote in my voice, probably too much at times. But that was my first script, and it came to me out of like frustration and anger, and like felt like my back was against the wall. And it was just like, I'm just going to write what I want to write. And that was the script that ended up kind of doing things for me and getting meetings and finding my agent, and so it all worked out.
I love that story.
Yeah.
I remember reading that, and you could tell it was just like love on a page. It was just, you were having so much fun writing that script. It was so Josh, and now that like defines you. But yeah, before that you're writing a lot of rom-coms.
Which I still love, by the way. Just don't get me wrong.
Me too.
But the reason why this is important in talking about this like arc is because that was like the start of me kind of like, for me personally, just being like, you know what? I don't care what people are going to say about this. I don't care what happens with it. I'm just going to write this from a place of pure love, and just in I'm just going to go. And that was,
yeah.
It was a very freeing experience. And I think at that time, and just in general, I think people relate to it, where maybe you're like writing and you're trying to adapt your style to something else. And
yeah.
So that's I Fuck James Bond.
Yeah. Well, your story is going to be so much better than mine.
No, it's not. I know this
talking
already.
Talking about rom-coms, I'm gonna go into my rom-com, the only rom-com I've ever written, called Wall and Bing.
Yes, I've read this script.
I still love it. And just in thinking about it for this episode today, I was like, do I want to go back in and like make it good? So in college, I read Jeeves and Wooster, written by P.G. Wodehouse. Actually, I watched the British show first, and it stars Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry. It's hilarious. It's awesome. And that made me want to read the books.
You're so sophisticated.
It is. I know. I was a you know, a lit major. I love the world. It takes place in the 1920s. Hugh Laurie plays this aristocratic British bachelor who is a complete idiot, but also has a good heart, and that's what makes him really fun to watch. And then Stephen Fry plays his butler and also happens to be like this genius and also a huge snob. If you're old enough to remember early internet days, Ask Jeeves comes from this.
Oh.
It's amazing. If you're a writer, highly recommend, just because P.G. Wodehouse's dialogue is incredible. It has this really great rhythm, all the personalities that he manages to get through in this sort of very period dialogue is just really great. So I loved all of this. And when I went to grad school after college and my screenwriting professor said, hey, the only way to graduate is to finish 2 feature-length screenplays, I decided Wall and Bing would be one of them. And I was so inspired by how much I love this 1920s aristocratic world of politeness and rules, the rhythm of that dialogue, I decided to kind of just do a movie in that space, but I didn't know what story I wanted to tell. And at the same time, I did really want to write a rom-com because I love them. I was in college, so, you know, you're very emo about love and relationships and the fantasy of what rom-coms are. So I immediately thought that the dynamic between a female butler and a wealthy 1920s bachelor would be really fun because me personally, I love rom-coms where the man falls in love with like the unexpected choice, right? He lives his life on the superficial and then goes for someone's soul. And like, that's what the love relationship is. So immediately this gives me that dynamic, right? Because you have a butler like Jeeves who knows everything there is to know about their boss. All the stuff they say and think behind closed doors, all their vulnerabilities, the butler sees it all. And I think that just made for a really good rom-com story. Because also vice versa, this is a guy who can't be himself in polite society and with all of his family obligations, but he can be himself with his butler. So it kind of just perfect fodder for a rom-com. So I wrote this. It went pretty far in the Nichols. Not that far, but it went far. I think it was a script that I did also send to the Austin Film Festival. I sent 2. I never went for it, but it didn't win anything, but it like got somewhere on a list there. But then it just died because I'm not a rom-com writer. And I think especially early in my career, I didn't want to get stuck being seen as a rom-com writer. I think especially as a woman, I was worried about it because people can easily kind of pin you in a corner.
Yeah.
So I didn't really put any effort into it. However, I think that maybe now that I'm a bit more established, I feel like I can maybe like pop out a rom-com and not worry that it's going to completely divert my career to now I'm a rom-com writer because I have this evidence that I'm not. But it's just like one of the tools in my tool belt. So who knows? Maybe I'll go back to it. I really miss it.
Well, I'm going to throw a little spitball just live and in person on the on the podcast. So I'm just going to try to merge this with modern day Tasha.
Okay.
Rom-com Tasha.
Yeah, let's go.
You've got Wall and Bing. And Bing is the butler?
Yeah.
The female butler?
Yes.
What if Bing has a little secret past? She's this butler, maybe for hire, assassin, hit woman. She's got this dark, dark past, and she's actually hiding. She's become a butler, and this very polite Wall has fallen for her, and now he's in love with her, and it's a rom-com-ish, but there is this assassin plot that's happening, or hitman plot that's happening.
This is very interesting, because then probably midpoint, back half of Act 2, Wall gets kidnapped for ransom or something. And who can save him but his butler?
And oh my God, it's a period piece, female John Wick rom-com.
Oh my God.
I'm all in.
Am I writing this next?
I could see, you know, like the posters is very proper. The two people, like the Jeeves and Wooster, like the Wall and Bing are just two proper individuals, but there's just like blood dripping down her arm.
That's amazing.
So
she's all in like this tattered butler uniform as she's like serving him his tea.
Yeah.
She's got like bruises and fucking sells itself.
It could start so proper and elegant. And just like this, it's just like this
God
beautiful
it,
story.
Wall and Bing's coming back.
Wall and Bing. The revenge. Okay.
All right.
My second script. So Tasha, I had written, I fuck James Bond. I get my agent. I'm out in the world. Now I'm writing action comedies. I'm in action. I'm not trying to write two comedy comedy, but I'm out there. I'm writing stuff. That's what I'm meeting on. In the time, I had a manager. It blew up in my face, so I left my manager. And then I met my current manager, Jay-Z, and I had a few ideas, but nothing was landing. So Jay-Z and I sit down to talk about what we should work on because we are a new couple. I had a few things out there that were all like action related. So it was like, well, let's keep you writing in the action, thriller, action, comedy territory. And so we took a walk. We're just chit-chatting. I was a new father. I was like, man, I just had my daughter. I'm like sitting. And I always wanted to work on something like Alias. Like I love the TV show Alias. And so while we were just taking a walk and we got back up to his office. And I remember it was like, what about like a father-daughter action movie? And he was like, oh yeah. And so then we proceeded just to spitball. Well, okay, this. And then we ended up calling it Father-Daughter Day. So it was this script with a father and daughter where the father figures out that she's a spy. I've talked about this before, but what's important about this conversation is in that moment, he was asking me, well, what do you want to write? Do you want to write a studio film that we can sell? Do you want to write something that, you know, just gets you recognized and we can try to push it out to like, what do you want to write? And I was like, dude, I want to sell a studio film. So I went in with a very direct one way of like, studio film, we're going to try to sell this thing. Like that was it. Yeah. That was my goal going in. And so I ended up developing with him Father Daughter Day. We ended up writing Father Daughter Day. And I'm bringing this part of my script up because this was kind of like, if you could track it back to Bond to this, where it was kind of like, all right, I've been having all these meetings and now I just want to do more meetings and try to kind of like take this to the next level. Father Daughter Day was written and it was, I kind of just always talked about my daughter whenever I did it. It kind of came together also kind of quickly, to be honest. Like it was a little constricting to have it on a day, going back to what you said about having a night. But yeah, so that was Father Daughter Day. It almost sold and then it fell apart in like a weekend, which will be another story for another day. And then it just kind of went away. Then it came back in my life, back and forth. Yeah, so that was Father Daughter Day. That was like my intro with my manager and just trying to get on the same page. And that was the first thing we wrote together. I always liked it.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. I love the storytelling that you're doing.
Listen, the arc of it.
Fireside chat with Josh Holland.
No, I'm only bringing this up because, you know, it's like that progression of like, oh, well, where do these ideas come from? It definitely stemmed from, oh, well, what do I like? I like Alias. Oh, wait, I just had a daughter. What if I could write something that would like be cool with a daughter?
But it also came from like a personal place of passion. You said it came together quickly. Usually stuff that you're very passionate about tends to work that way.
Yeah.
I know that I struggle, and that's one of the stories I have here is I struggle when I'm trying to mash things up.
Sure.
Mash things together. Like just be very conscious of like writing the studio movie. And it's interesting because not to plug our script club again, but if you read Burn Night by Chris Sparling, this is a really good example of a studio movie, which we will discuss during script club of what that means and why that's the case. But the Scream studio movie, having a clear idea of what you want the movie to accomplish in terms of your career can also be very helpful. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's important. And I think when you sign with, I don't know if this happened to you, but when you sign with someone, you have that conversation. Like, what do you want to write? Where do you want your career to go?
Yes. Well, that's a really great segue
Boom.
Into my second one
yes.
called The Woman.
Oh,
I originally came up with this idea. It is a period kind of King Arthur story told from the point of view of the women in those stories. And it came to me because I studied literature, but I also studied history. I have a degree in both. And when I studied at Oxford, one of the things we did there was we read all the source material of King Arthur. So like all of the original texts of King Arthur. We read all of it. And much to my professor's chagrin, I often did papers on comparing the original source material to movies, which she was not excited about. But that's what I was excited about.
So Tasha.
But something I, this is very Tasha. But something I noticed in reading the original source material of King Arthur was that all of the adventures were prompted by women, whether it was the Lady of the Lake who gives, like, holds Excalibur out of the lake and gives it to King Arthur, setting him on this journey, or a woman approaching them, setting them on the journey to get the Holy Grail. Like, it's always women who prompt the journey, and then they're sort of dismissed. And they're more of a device in these stories than anything else. And I was like, well, obviously, just because I'm a woman, they were more interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know if a woman created and gave King Arthur Excalibur, I wanted to know her story. And so then I sort of backtracked from there and created this woman who was a blacksmith who created Excalibur. But even before that, like, this idea of doing a sort of I was going to say medieval. It's not, it's always, it's before that, that time period, but yeah. Like a fantasy historical show, movie, because it originally came to me as a movie idea because I loved movies and that's what I wanted to write, and I'd never written for TV before. My brain just didn't go in that direction. It's always so male heavy. I just didn't want to, I don't want to do that. So I wanted to write, so similar to what you're talking about, like, you wanted to write your I Fuck James Bond movie because you fucking love James Bond. You want to write a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
For me, that was the same. Like, I want to write this really, like, powerful, action heavy, fucking cool, badass woman set in this world where usually only men exist. And so I wrote a movie about her. And I'm kind of backtracking because actually, my very first idea was not King Arthur. That came in later. My first idea was just this, like a passion for wanting to write this woman in this world. And so I wrote that, and it actually, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm now backtracking even further. It came from, I pitched on the movie Red Sonja years ago, like very early in my career, and I didn't get the job. But I loved the story that I came up with, and I decided to turn that into my own movie because it was sort of so original and wasn't really based on the comics that much, that I, you know, took the stuff out that would be based on comics and sort of did my own thing. That's where this movie came from, the woman. I turned it into my reps and they hate it. They don't understand it. They don't like it. It's too expensive. We don't know what, they basically were like, we don't know what to do with this. Like, carry on.
Wow.
I was just left with this thing that I loved, that I put so much work into, that had nowhere to go. And then cut to, I met with my manager for the first time. And at coffee, she was telling me, what are some ideas that you love that you don't know what to do with? And I immediately told her about the woman. And she's like, I can already tell you're passionate about it. And she asked me questions like, why did you want to write it? What drove you to, like, questions that as a writer, you like are excited to answer, not questions about marketing and audience. Like, she didn't ask me any of those. She asked me why I cared about it. And so again, she could see the passion. And so together with her, that's when I started to combine the King Arthur stuff, because I was already, that was in my brain already, like, bugging me. And then I combined it and we turned it into a TV show. So that, I'm going to end there. Like, that's how that idea came about.
No, that's awesome. And what a question. Like, what idea do you love but you don't know what to do with? Like, I feel,
yeah,
like that is such, like, an important question. So shout out to 1L. But I remember the woman. For some reason, it's one of the more vivid scripts that you've written in my brain. I remember giving you the note saying, I think she needs a name.
Right.
Every
freaking
time. And then you were like, nope. And then the other thing is, I remember the opening. Like, I could probably maybe write the opening right now, because
yeah,
I just, David, I think would give the same note about it. And then you were like, nope. And you never changed it. And it actually,
I opened the movie with a 2-page blacksmithing scene with no dialogue. It's still in, it's in the TV show.
I know. That's why I love it. I just remember being like, I don't know. I think there needs to be a little more.
That, talk about, like, notes that stand your ground on. I'm not fucking giving her a name. I'm not.
No, it all made sense.
Not changing this blacksmithing scene.
You were right. I was not. And I appreciate it. But anyway, I love the woman. And that was, yes, I remember how passionate you were about the woman and still are.
Yeah, we're still trying to sell it in the UK. No one, we ended up selling it to Amazon as a TV show. And then you know, they ended up having two female, they had Lord of the Rings and then they had Wheel of Time. And so they're like, I don't know. I just think we have our fantasy stuff. So we got it back and now we're trying to sell it in the UK. So we'll see, guys. Lame. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. Number three.
My third one.
Yeah.
To cover, to finish this arc.
I can't wait.
I was writing action comedies, Tasha, as I might have just talked about. So I was writing these action comedies. And I sit down with my manager. This is like, there's obviously things in between the two scripts I've talked about. Sit down, talk with my manager. And he was like, I got to just tell you what, man. I'm like, okay, Jay-Z, what's up? And he's like, I think you need to just switch it up. Take a swing. Let's think outside the box. Don't keep writing these like action. Like, let's just go for it. Like go in a different direction. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I start kind of going in that other direction. And I know I remember I had talked to you about it and I was, and like, this was over the course of time. I'm now trying to think of like my next idea and I'm just waiting and I'm waiting. And I had watched the movie Don't Breathe around that time, which is an amazing movie if anyone's seen it. And I also love the movie Disturbia. And so I was like, oh man, if I could do like something smaller, like a Don't Breathe, a Disturbia type thing. At some point, I think I was watching like a Harry Potter film or something. Because I was
as
in like
one does.
I was in like the fantastical. I was stepping in like Tasha Land for just a brief second, but it made a big difference because I was like, what if there was like the idea started as like a home invasion, but with like a magical element? Like if the person who gets invaded, the idea started as, what if this girl, there's this home invasion and the girl's home from college and she actually has like magical abilities. And she ends up taking people out. Like that was like the stem of the idea. And I remember actually talking to you about this. And I was like kicking it around. So I talked to my manager about it. He kind of like leveled it up a little bit and was like, well, what if it's like more Disturbia and there's like magic next door? And I'm like, oh, okay, what if there's magic next door? So then we end up turning this script into, it was called Baba Yaga. And it was based off of this witch who's kind of famous in John Wick lore because everyone calls him Baba Yaga. And it was like this Russian witch that lived next door to this woman. And this script started and like my manager, this is why this story is important, is because my manager was like, do like the opposite of everything you normally do. Like just go outside the box. And I pushed myself to go outside of the box and it didn't work. The story started with like a girl who had PTSD coming back from like the war. It was so like, not me. And it was almost like I reverted back into like an old version of like before I had written James Bond. And I was like, oh no. And so it was like this really dark kind of like story, which was cool, but it just wasn't there. And like, I remember you guys giving me notes and being like, it's just not there. So the reason I bring this up is because, well, I'm sorry, let me just backtrack. That then script, we ended up taking it out. A producer became attached for like a split second. And he ended up having one or two small notes that turned into much larger notes. And the script then turned into a script called The Witch of Green Grove. And it became much lighter. It became much more Disturbia, much more like Amblin-y, which is kind of like the vibe that I probably should have shot for from the very beginning. But it was kind of a mess. Like, and I love the idea still. Like, I love like the root of the idea that I kind of bent and went like a different direction because I was just trying to do something different. And I in hindsight shouldn't have done a lot of the like things that I did because I wasted a lot of time on it. And that was the script Baba Yaga. That's pretty much the end of that. That was like how I went from Action Josh to maybe I'll think outside the box.
Yeah, genre Josh. I still love Baba Yaga, Wish of Green Grove. I loved every version.
Thank you.
I have a sneaking suspicion, because the movie is so close to being like perfect.
Oh.
That I imagine you will come back to it once people have forgotten about it and you'll find all the things that are wrong with it because you have perspective and then you'll sell it. It's just really quite good.
It's definitely the closest to like my version. But at that point, and the lesson that I learned was I tried to do like a different version and not, it wasn't 100% not me, but it was just like, you wrote what? I remember, like it's just, I don't know. But anyway, I love the
current
version.
Josh is still Josh. That's very Josh.
Yeah, that's so, my wheelhouse.
Yeah, the Amblin witch version was very cool.
I'm so excited for whatever you're about to say. I don't know your third one.
I know, like, I'm going to disappoint you. I don't think you've ever, maybe you've heard of this one. I'm going to call it Runner, but it was also called CCTV at one point.
I've read CC. What are you talking about?
Okay, CCTV.
Think you could sneak a script past me?
I picked this one because, so I have a million ideas that are just moments, like concepts that I've never broken out into to try to make a movie. I've never really put the work into it. They're just fucking thrown in a folder. So those didn't really feel helpful to talk about here. But this one is one I've tried to write and have failed at writing and therefore wanted to talk about, because this is also a good example of how you get ideas and what ends up happening to them. So CCTV/Runner came from me playing a video game that I tried to look up this morning what the fuck this game was called, and I can't remember, which really, really bothers me. Maybe one of you can tell me what it was. This was many years ago. It was a side-scroller game that starts with a boy jumping over a fence.
Mario.
And what?
Super Mario Brothers.
No. Dad, I thought you had it. I was like, there's no way he does. He starts with him jumping over a fence and being chased, and you don't know why. And then the process of the game is kind of finding out what the hell has happened to him, what is going on from this very first frame of the movie, or the video game. See what I did there? So I was immediately inspired just by that visual, by that sort of powerful punch in the face opening. And so I started thinking about, well, what the game to me kind of unraveled. So what would a movie look like that didn't unravel? Because I love the idea of throwing the audience into a story in the middle of action and having them have to play catch up to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And also misleading them along the way. And they think they're about to figure out what's going on. They think they got it. And then you're actually, no, curveball, it's actually this over here. Which I think that this opener really gives you that opportunity to play with the audience's expectation. And as you know from listening to this podcast, I really love movies and TV shows that force the audience to kind of come along for the ride and invest themselves in it rather than sit back and just like watch something play out before them. So that just was an idea that I was kicking around. And then I believe the CCTV aspect came from like watching a found footage movie at the time. Again, don't know which one it was, but being like, this could be like, what's so cool about found footage is it only tells part of the story. And so I was like, what if we combine the two ideas? Because again, I really like this idea of the audience not knowing things and having to constantly lean in and puzzle things out over the course of the movie. What if you combine these two ideas? You start with a woman who has escaped something. Maybe she's even in like prison garb, something. Jumps over a wall and is running for her life. We don't know why, ends up escaping. And then the whole movie is told through CCTV cameras. Or like, let's say she goes to a hotel and there's, I don't know, like a camera in the, I don't know. Like at the time I had a Kinect for your Xbox. So that's how old this idea is. And what I was very disturbed by the Kinect is that it's just always on in your room and can always see you. And so your Xbox can always see you and just send your video back to Microsoft, right? So like that idea came. So I can still have quiet moments in rooms or, I don't know, restrooms, wherever she decides to go. But it only tells part of the story because let's say there's a, I don't know why there'd be CCTV in a restroom, but let's say she can just close the door and have a private moment that the audience is not privy to, that the audience is forced to wonder what's going on behind there.
Yeah.
And I just love that combination of things. My problem, I worked on this with my manager, and my problem is I can never figure out what the movie was about. Like those are just concepts. They're just, it's like basically plot things. It's tone, it's plot, it's visuals, it's not story. And I can never figure out what my story was about. So this has never gone anywhere. I've had so many different versions of it. Yeah, I mean, that's an idea that I love that I just haven't figured out. And I think it's because I started in the wrong place. And all the million ideas I mentioned that I have in folders all kind of start in the wrong place. They're just like cool concepts. And I don't know what the movie is.
That's interesting. I remember that. Did you outline that pretty extensively?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was fine, but I think you guys all sensed something was wrong with it, and we sort of didn't know what. I think the story just never came together, like what she was running from, what she was after, what she wanted.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right about, I can't really fully remember, but I can see that in a movie like that or a script like that, what the movie is about is a big issue because, you know, you could get bogged down thinking about the clever ways to have the CCTV cameras kind of like show the story. And I almost feel like sometimes that can take away so much brain power to be like, what the hell is this about? Why would she even be over here? What, you know, it's almost like, that's tricky.
It's kind of a mystery movie. Like, you basically have to write it like a mystery. So maybe that's like the key to figuring out is...
It's like Memento.
Figure out what she did and just go backwards.
Yeah.
I don't know. If I ever figured it out, it's a cool concept.
It is like a mystery movie. One day we should just do a spitball breakdown. Now that we've talked about like breaking down mysteries and stuff like that, it would be fun to break down.
I agree. It's kind of interesting hearing all of our... where these ideas come from, because it all came from a place of passion and B, watching or reading something out in the world that inspired us to do something similar, but like very different, just because it sparked in us something that inspired us, which is what art is supposed to do.
Yeah. My favorite thing is, like I've said this before, is just kind of putting a seemingly average individual in a very extreme situation. So I sometimes start from places like that, maybe too often. Like, that was probably why I was like, I got to think outside the box here. But it's just interesting how stories just come together. Like, they just, some just come out of thin air, just out of nowhere. And you're like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
You just figured it out.
They come out of nowhere because I think you have this foundation of constantly like watching, reading, living a life. So all of these experiences that you're having are just kind of sitting there and stewing in yourself, so that it may seem like a sudden light bulb moment that came from nowhere, but has probably been digesting for a long time because you're living a life. So I don't know. I mean, I think the lesson of this is go read a lot more, go watch a lot more, and then go out into the world and experience things, because that will just give you this bevy of
totally.
Ideas.
I was just thinking that, just like the idea if, like, let's say you can't travel and you can't go out and you see things, whatever, like the idea of watching and reading more, that's kind of like the path forward to kind of figure out a different idea, because, you know, it's figuring out, oh, I want to talk about a relationship. Okay, how do we put that relationship in a different setting so you're not, you know, copying something else or doing something that might have been done before? And then you kind of get that inspiration from watching Harry Potter or watching or playing a video game, or, you know, any of this stuff. So it's great. And you're right. It does stew, lives in your brain. It's germinating. Just needs a little watering.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
All right. Those are our three ideas. Quote of the day.
Quote of the day.
To some people, I'm kind of a Merlin who takes lots of crazy chances, but rarely makes mistakes. I've made some bad ones, but fortunately the success have come along fast enough to cover up the mistakes. When you go to bat as many times as I do, you're bound to get a good average. That's why I keep my projects diversified. Walt Disney.
I love that quote. That's my favorite quote we've ever done.
It's very you on your journey as well. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Follow us at Act Two Writers for more awesome writing stuff. You can follow me, Tasha, at Story Thursday on Instagram or on Twitter at Tasha3.0.
I'm Josh Hallman on Instagram, Joshua Hallman on Twitter.
And as always, the Act Two podcast is a production of Act Two, a network and support group for the everyday working screenwriter. This episode was edited by Paul Lundquist.